Rehabilitation, a progressive evidence-based treatment that utilizes an FDA-approved tourniquet to reduce blood flow to an extremity during exercise. Blood flow-restricted rehabilitation allows significant strength gains with minimal stress to the involved joint. This is ideal for anyone that is unable to tolerate high-intensity workouts, including pre- and post-surgery. PT Associates of Emporia at 12th and Industrial, 620-208-7878.
All the latest sports news and reviews, actions and reactions, your questions and comments. This is Saturday Morning Sports Talk on 14 KVOE. Live and local.
Saturday Morning Sports Talk on a rainy Saturday morning. Steve and Greg in the house. Don Weiss joins us. Good morning, Don.
Morning.
We'll get to Don momentarily. And Greg has assured me that the disc golfers are playing in the rain. Because their scores are being posted, huh?
Yes, they are. They've round number six, final day of the PDGA Junior Disc Golf World Championships are underway. This morning, it's the final round at all the different courses in Emporia today. They'll play the short courses, so it might go fairly quick for some of them. But then this afternoon, beginning about noon, the top four golfers in each age group will be playing in a nine-hole championship round to determine who the final champions are, and they'll stagger those tee-off times throughout the day this afternoon at the country club.
One of the older kids are at the country club this morning.
No.
They're not?
No. I believe they're at one of the Jones Park, because nobody's playing this morning at the country club. They're at Jones East and Jones West, at Peter Pan, at Hammond, and at Soden's Grove.
Okay. We're going to be joined now by Kevin Hoover. And Kevin is a photo.
What's that?
You don't have him? He didn't answer? Could you try him again? What did he say?
Going to voicemail.
Okay. Well, that sucks. Kevin is a photojournalist with the Professional Disc Golf Association, and he was strolling around and works for the PDGA, and been an employee, been playing disc golf for 20 years, and he was a portrait photographer and gave that up in order to, I thought it'd be interesting to talk with him, but I talked with him yesterday morning, and we were supposed to go at 10 minutes after 8. We're a little tardy, but maybe the rain's got him doing something he wasn't planning on doing. So Greg has given us a report. There is disc golf underway, so we'll leave it at that. So glad you're with us, Weiss.
Hey, glad to be here. So, you know, Greg was talking about the short courses here. It was kind of interesting. We had a event on campus on Thursday night where they – played three holes in Welch Stadium and then went over and played the new Hornet Hills course at Wilson Park. And I was listening to some of the people talking through there, and they were saying how, you know, it'd be harder to get more rounds in here than it would be back where they were from because the courses are so much longer and so much harder. And I think we sometimes forget that. I mean, like, the Country Club disc golf course here is probably like playing Pebble Beach or something. I mean, it's top of the line.
So
in the country,
the courses are longer and harder here.
Yeah. They're not used to it. A lot of them are just kind of around here and toss it down a little bit. This is a little bit more difficult, they said.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, but what was the best scores than the 18-year-olds on the Country Club? Not cumulative. I think they were 23 under after the first day, and then they played the Country Club the next day, and I think the guy ended up 25 under.
The guy who's in the lead, Peter Calabrese, was 2 under at the Country Club.
Right, and he gave back a lot of shots before he finally got it going. And Kevin told me one of the things that makes Country Club difficult, which surprised me, was the length.
Mm-hmm.
Said it's a long course, and another thing he told me was, you know, everybody plays 36 holes twice in this thing, and he said the parents of the younger kids were telling them they love that because the kids were really, really tired.
So I imagine so. You know, I walked around with a couple of the groups, one on Wednesday morning, who were playing the Jones East long course. That would have been the 18 and over division. And I talking to some of those people, and of course, they were just getting started and they were having fun. But yeah, you know, it is a little longer. You get over to Peter Pan Park and it does shrink down just a little bit. And Hammond Park's even a little smaller. And even you get over to Soden's Grove and it gets even a little smaller. And that's why they have some of the younger players playing at Hammond and playing at Soden's, and also playing at using the Peter Pan short course. Those that designed these courses took a lot of consideration into, you know, making it so it's inviting for younger players to play some of these courses and making it inviting so that it can be a challenge for the older disc golfers as well. And I think that's what makes Emporia so unique. There's a lot of courses, but it also, those courses can offer your, challenge your game at different levels.
Yeah, there's a lot of variety. There's long and short. And, of course, we got more room here than they do in a lot of places.
That's true.
So that's a good thing. Here's an interesting story. Don Hill was sharing this with me. Coach Doty, Craig Doty and his family are on vacation, but both for this and for the gravel, for the gravel race, they rented their house out, which a lot of people are doing, are leasing their house out. Well, the people that are leasing Doty's house this week for this tournament have a 12-year-old son playing in this tournament. They're from Boston, Massachusetts, and they brought the whole family. So that's a pretty special 12-year-old. And he was in 12th place, so he isn't going to win either. But,
right.
I mean, it isn't like he's a phenom or something like that. So,
and that's, you know, in talking with some of the players, the one thing that they, most of them have mentioned is that they really enjoy playing with players that are their age and getting to meet new people. In fact, Connor Kottenmeier, who's our intern this summer, talked to Melody Castrita from she's from Bastrop, Texas. She has two sisters that are also playing in it, Aria, who's leading the 15 and under division, and Haley, who was the defending 12 and under champion. You know, they said, Melody said, you know, I kind of like playing with the players who may not be at the same level I am, who might be a little bit low. We had a blast. I played with a couple of them the first round. I had a blast. And it doesn't really matter if you're a top-of-the-line player or if you're at the bottom of the line. You can always have fun on the disc golf course. And all the parents that I've talked to have said they've had a good time there. You know, they always, every golfer says, well, I could have played better. There could be some improvement. From the ones that I've talked to, they've all had a very good experience, and there are some of them say, hey, we're going to come back. One, themselves, they may be professional golfers, and they want to come back and play some of the courses too. And they just had a great experience here in Emporia. And a big tip of the hat to Emporia residents for being very welcoming to those that are here, because it makes a difference. If they feel welcome, they'll come back and they'll spread the word that Emporia is a great place to come play disc golf.
Well, I'll share one more thing about that. We had admissions were actually up on campus when we had our little event on Thursday, and there was one girl there who was 15 years old. She's already got her life planned out through college. She's going to come to Emporia, go to Emporia State, and she's going to work at Dynamic Discs all the way through college. So she's got that planned out all the way.
Well, and there was a story I heard this week. Somebody that works, that has a sibling or something that works at Eck Real Estate, and said they were working the phones, and they got a call from a guy, and he said, yeah, I've been to Emporia three times, played disc golf, and I love it. I'm going to move there, and this guy's showing him houses. He's moving here. The other thing, and you said we start to know their names, Greg, Paul Macbeth. Is that, am I saying it right?
Yeah.
He's a fella that he's won the Glass Blown, what used to be the Glass Blown, the Dynamic Disc Open. He's won it more than once, and he's one of the better players in the world. And he recently signed a $10 million endorsement package. So They're getting and of course disc golf. We had Jeremy and Doug in here. We got Kevin now. Oh, all right. Well, let's drop what I was blabbering about and go to Kevin Hoover. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
we are fine. You're a photojournalist with the Disc Golf Association. So
yeah,
how long
yeah,
you been
I
doing
am,
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm a photographer, and I work for the Professional Disc Golf Association. I've been doing it not long, actually. I'm pretty new to it. I came out this season, probably about 4 months ago, and just kind of started going to events and shooting the players on the course, and just kind of trying to feel it out and see, you know, if there was an opportunity and see where I would fit in. And then after about four events of just being there and being present and working with the players and trying to meet and network, I was able to meet the media department of the Professional Disc Golf Association, and they expressed interest in having me come out and cover the Professional Disc Golf World Championships 2 weeks ago in Ogden, Utah. And I gladly accepted the offer and had a wonderful time working with them on that. And then through that, they've opened the door for me to continue to work with them this season. So I'm here in Emporia covering the Junior Worlds. In a couple weeks, I'll be in Tennessee covering the Masters Worlds, and then Am Worlds and Orlando and all the majors for the rest of the season.
So it's a full-time gig now?
It is a full-time gig now, yep.
Absolutely. So where's home for you?
I live in southwestern Michigan. I live in a small little farming community, right about 30 minutes west of the capital of Lansing.
So what you're experiencing in Emporia is probably a whole lot different than home.
You know, Emporia is a beautiful city. I came here 3 months ago for DDO. That was actually the second event that I photographed. Bobby Brown and Jeremy Rusko were kind enough to let me come down to Emporia, and I had a wonderful time. This is a beautiful little city that's got so many great things going on, and I got to tell you, Wednesday when I rolled into town, I just had that feeling of like, hey, it's good to be back in Emporia, you know? So feels good to be here. I look forward to many more events in the future here in Emporia.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you. Do you wear those long pants and long sleeve shirt all the time, or do you... Some of this weather put you into shorts.
No, you know, I try and I wear long sleeve and pants a lot. And people ask me that question because, you know, you get out in these hot zones and it's a kind of a twofold thing. Number one, I don't really like to have the beating sun on my skin the whole day. And because I am a, you know, kind of one man band, I don't get the opportunity to hold an umbrella over my head or go and find shade. I kind of have to be where the action is, so it puts me in the elements a lot more. The other reason is a technical reason. As you can probably imagine, it's a little difficult to operate my camera when I have sunscreen on my hands, and then if it's on my face and it gets in my eyes, it's really hard for me to focus and make sure that the images are there and that I'm getting the things done. And when you're a photojournalist, and especially in sports, everything happens once. You only have one opportunity to capture these moments. And if you're kind of struggling with your situation, you're 9 times out of 10 going to miss that moment. So, yeah.
So have you seen any outstanding moments that kind of stand out through the first 3 days of play?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am continually impressed by the next generation of this sport. I mean, you would think like, oh, maybe the 18-year-old division, which I've seen some amazing things. Like I saw a chain out at the country club 2 days ago from one of the 18 to 16 guys, which is super exciting. But I got to say, it's probably the, you know, 12 and under division, the 10 and under division that just impresses me so much. Like between how good they are on the course, navigating and their putting, it's also just the way that they're able to navigate the emotional roller coaster of disc golf. I was talking to somebody yesterday and I just said, you know, these kids are going to be all right. They're learning how to deal with what adults deal with daily, you know, is that up and down of emotions. They're learning life lessons on this course that they'll take on for the rest of their lives, you know. But yeah, it's got to be the kids. You know, yesterday at Jones East, I was standing with a PDGA guy and we just watched two kids just fearlessly charge a basket from, I don't know, 50 feet away uphill, and both of them sank it. You're just like, holy cow, these guys, they don't even know what consequence is yet, you know? So, yeah.
One of our guests, he's actually kind of a semi-regular here, is a photojournalist from the university. He's actually head of media relations. His name's Don Weiss, and I know he's interested in what you're doing out there with your camera.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, interesting thing then when you talk about a sport like disc golf where, you know, like what do you focus on? How do you decide who you're following? Are you just looking at the leaderboard or are you going to try and find the great photo? What are you doing on that?
Yeah, you know, so per my requirements with the PDGA, I basically look at the leaderboards and I try and focus on whoever's in contention. My images will be part of stories that will be written, so I have to make sure that it's I'm focusing on the people that are in contention in the divisions to win. So, you know, today, for example, we've got a lot of divisions. I pay attention to the PDGA live scoring, and I just go right to wherever the leaders are. I spend some time with them. And then I just go to the next leaderboard. You just kind of pay attention that way. So the other side of that, what do I focus on? I kind of take a different approach to photographing disc golf. You see a lot of people that photograph action shots, which are super cool, and it shows, you know, what's going on with the sport. But I kind of am chasing down the emotional side of this sport. You know, it's the after the throw that I'm looking for. It's the elation, or it's the, you know, defeat when something goes right or something goes wrong. That, because I feel like, you know, there's a small percentage of people that can at this point that can relate to like throwing 600 feet, you know, but more people can relate to that kind of emotional travel of good and bad shots. And I think as humans, we just inherently look at that and can feel it. So I'm just always trying to find, I call it the iconic moments. You know, like that's what I'm looking for, iconic moments of people that are just going through at the battle, you know, the victory or the loss.
So with all the divisions that we have here, are you a one-man show here? Are there a couple other people that are shooting this?
Yeah, so I'm there's a couple other people. So the PDGA has a bunch of people that they bring out to all these different events. Right now, I'm the only photojournalist here. The other PDGA media coordinators all have cameras. The people who write the stories all have cameras, and they kind of float around, and, you know, they are chasing the stories. And then there's a videographer. But myself and another gentleman who's from Colorado are the two main guys that are out, you know, focusing on the leaders in the main divisions. You know, at Worlds 2 weeks ago, the two of us, we're basically tag team it. You know, we would chase down the leaders and we would stay on different cards. So we were able to, you know, capitalize. Like if I knew that somebody on the third card was charging, I would say, hey, Conrad, go to the third card. You stay there. I'm going to stay with lead card. And we're just going to make sure that we get it. Here's a little bit different. Obviously, so many divisions. You basically, like today, I'm at Peter Pan right now. I'll shoot here for 45 minutes, and then I'm going to jump over to Jones and try and go between east and west to get as much coverage of that as I can before the finals start this afternoon.
Hey, where were you in Ogden? Were you close to the hole-in-one? Or not the hole-in-one, but the eagle, I guess it was.
Yeah. So I was, actually. I was right behind James Conrad in kind of the front of all the gallery. My approach to photography, whether it's shooting this stuff on the course or in a studio setting, is I usually let the light kind of dictate where I'm going to take a photograph from, and I'm always looking for beautiful light. And in that scenario, we're talking the setting sun, the cottonwood in the air. I mean, it was like perfect backlighting. My history is in the cinema world. I was a camera assistant for 14 years, so a lot of my influence in my images and composition comes from movies. So I just knew from all my years of being in the film business that, you know, this is golden hour, the magic hour. This is the moment. So I let James be in front of me, the sun, you know, at my face, and he lined up. It's such a crazy story. He was lining up. He walks back, and James has a really big run-up. So I was a little too close, I felt, and I adjusted back, and when I knelt again, my, like, media pass, like, popped a little bit under the pressure of my leg, and he looked right at me. I was, like, looking in my lens. And when you watch the video, he's clearly looking to make sure that his footing's right and he's not looking at me, you know, how we remember the stories, you know. But I was close enough that I could see his eyes, and I had my camera, you know, right on his face. He turned. I took a photograph of him with the sky and just his hair and his shoulder. And then he started to take off, and, you know, I just held my frame and let the shutter go and make sure he was in my focus points. And once he threw the disc, everybody was fired up, you know, 1,700 people there. And I let the camera down, because the other thing with this sport is you have to train yourself to not let the camera down once they throw the disc, because that's where the real stuff is. So I brought it down to watch the flight of the disc. And as I was watching the flight of the disc, you could hear the crowd start to build, and you could hear them start to yell, "Go in." And I just put my lens back up and put it right on James. And as soon as I heard the crowd erupt, I just hit the shutter button and just did my best to keep him in the frame as everybody from behind me just jumped over top of me, you know, to tackle him and high five him and to go through the whole thing. And, you know, I experienced it through the lens of my camera, which was a very surreal experience, because you almost don't even feel like you're there when it's happening. And then he took off running, and I looked, as a photographer, and if you guys, you know, same thing, you check, right? You're like, "Oh God, did I get it?" You know, I want to make sure. There's an anxiety. And as soon as I hit the play on my camera and went a couple frames back, I realized what I had captured was just these amazing. I shoot color and black and white sometimes. So I'll shoot black and white in my camera and I'll stick with it the whole time. I just love monochromatic look and what you can do with it. My style for photography is, my color is representative of what's happening. True photojournalist, I don't manipulate the colors. The black and white, I can get a little bit more artistic with it, and I can manipulate it a little bit. So I shot that all in black and white. And when I saw it, I was like, "Oh my God, these are amazing images. I can't believe I just captured these." And then, you know, we went through the whole thing. And yeah, once I got them and I showed them to James and the PDGA, and everybody was just very blown away. And I just couldn't believe it. Even to this day, I can't believe that I was lucky enough to be standing 3 feet away from the guy when he lined that shot up.
Well, and that shot's going to is having a terrific effect on the PGDA, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, that shot, along with the uptick from COVID and disc golf, it really put it on the map. You know, a lot of people say that that shot may be the single shot that puts disc golf into the mainstream.
Absolutely. So what do you do today? You don't have any sun.
Yeah, well, you just go, you just push it a little bit, as I call it. So I just go to 1600 ISO, which is about the limit of where I'll take my camera to, and I'll shoot wide open at 2.8. I'll keep my shutter probably around 1/2000, knowing that I'm going to be underexposing probably by a stop and a half. And then on the back end, I'll just recover my stop there in the post process. And yeah, you just kind of roll with the punches, you know. Try and keep the camera dry. Try and keep myself dry. Go bare bones too. I don't bring any accessories. I usually travel with two lenses. I have a wide lens, a 16-55, and then a tight lens, a 50-140. Today, I'll just travel with the 50-140. Won't expose my sensor to the elements or anything like this by trying to change lenses. And yeah, you just try and do your best to make sure that there's little grain as possible.
Yeah. Well, have a good day. And
yeah, thank you so much.
We'll see you up at the club this afternoon.
Yeah, you will. I'm super excited about it.
All right. Thank you,
right,
Kevin.
Guys. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great day.
Yeah, Kevin Hoover, a photojournalist with the Professional Golf Association. And Don, you can relate to a lot of that.
Yeah, not all the technical stuff he was talking about for sure, but understanding, you know, how to get the shot and how to line that up, those things are really difficult. And really, you have to be there to capture the moment. That's one of the things that I don't know that people understand, especially as a still photographer when they're out there. You know, you have to be able to be in the right place. You can't come to, like, the first quarter of a football game and then, you know, capture them and then leave and then get the excitement at the end of the game when you win at the end. So, and he was talking about how there were the other people that were there that were writing stories and taking photos. I'm sure, just from personal experience, that his photos will be better than what those people are doing, just because you can concentrate on that one part of it.
Well, I just think it's interesting that the Professional Golf Association hires someone to come and take pictures, not knowing that they're going to be good, but they're building their sport. It doesn't just happen by having a lot of people play. That certainly helps, and you can't do it But you also, there's a lot of, I know you and Greg both appreciate that.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, that's part of it, is you have to be able to get people interested in it somehow. And I think, you know, good photo, good video, good interviews, good, you know, all of that adds to it. I mean, you can't just have you can have the greatest event, but if nobody knows about it, it won't grow.
Or if you don't capture it.
Exactly.
So, all right. And you know what? From our point of view, good job by Ron sticking with it and keeping
yeah.
I'd actually tried him one time too, Ron, and didn't get him, but we got him, and good interview. So thanks, Ron. Let's get a break in. We'll work on some other stuff here. This is Saturday Morning Sports Talk. We're driven by LongvineAuto.com.
At Longvine Auto Plaza in Emporia, quality products and great customer service are what we value most. We work to provide our friends and customers our very best. We know how important a clean and safe environment is for you to shop in. We want you to feel comfortable about your safety while you look for the newest from Chevy and Buick. Chevy is the only brand to earn J.D. Power Dependability Awards for cars, trucks, and SUVs for 5 years in a row. And Buick has the most complete lineup of luxury SUVs. Need maintenance or repairs on your current vehicle? Let one of our award-winning service professionals or our Total Collision Center get you back on the road. If customer service and quality products are what you value most, come to Longvine Auto Plaza. It's our total commitment to you that has made the difference for over 50 years. So come in today or visit us at longvineauto.com. Chevy, find new roads.
Are you ready to play the game? Can you find what it takes to become a legend?
Win over $5,000 in cash and prizes playing hide-and-seek.
KBOE's hide-and-seek.
Validate your hunting license at sponsor locations starting July 12th and register for a $50 gift certificate from each sponsor or $50 in cash. Then on August 2nd, listen for a daily clue weekdays between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., leading you to the Hide and Seek Medallion. Return the medallion to the KVOE studios to claim the grand prize, $5,000 in prizes and $500 in cash. Must be 18 by July 1st. Complete rules available at the KVOE studios and online at KVOE.com. KVOE's Hide and Seek, brought to you in part by Brown Shoe Fit, Graves Drugs, Carey's Diamonds and Bridal, and Next Tech Wireless.
Live and local sports news and views, Saturday Morning Sports Talk on 14 KVOE.
Welcome back, Saturday Morning Sports Talk. Steve and Greg and Don Weiss and Don, I'm interested. You and is it your son or both your kids?
No, just Jack. I think, yeah. Doing talking about going to the baseball tour.
Yeah, your baseball tour. So how many stadiums have you visited? And tell us a little bit.
Well, we've just done four of them so far. Started out, you know, went to a Royals game. And then the next week we went to a Kansas City Monarchs game, which used to be the, what were they back in the
T-bones.
Day? The T-bones. Yeah. And then we went down to Wichita, went and saw the Wind Surge play. Riverfront Stadium down there is just beautiful. It's unbelievable. Very nice.
But they're
very
an independent
clean.
Team, right?
No, they're double A.
Okay.
Wichita is double A. They're with the Twins. And then the last one we went to before we went on vacation with his mom was we went down to Northwest Arkansas and saw the Naturals play. We got to see Bobby Witt Jr. go 0-for-3, but one of the worst games he's probably had, but it's been really great. And I mean, it's a fun time. It's, you know, something to do with my son and just being able to see all the different things and different ballparks and just it's fun night on a Friday night.
And you said the stadium in Wichita a little nicer than Lawrence Dumont?
A little bit, just barely. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's the cleanest bathrooms I think I've ever been in. I mean, that's anywhere. I mean, it's unbelievable. You go in there, it's a nice tile floor and you know, very spacious on their concourse up at the top. Plenty of room to walk around in the outfield, the berm that they have. Now, we actually got seats, and that's the best part. I mean, it's very affordable. I think it was like $14 for our tickets, and that was in like the fourth row or fifth row. Great price, very energetic crowd, really baseball knowledgeable into it, and big crowd. It was just a fun time down there.
It's kind of a nostalgic place for me. I did my first radio sports broadcast at Lawrence Dumont. It was Area 3.
Yeah.
And Dave Bingham, And the Hornets won. And the game they won, Jaime Cuesta came in relief. And so I don't know if it was you or somebody brought him up for an interview, interviewed Bingham first, and that went fine. And I noticed as I was talking to Coach Bingham that Jaime was putting bubble gum in his mouth. And I asked him five questions, and he answered them with six words. Three yeps, two no's, and a yes, sir.
Yep. I remember Jaime. I can buy that when he was on the radio. Now, away from the radio, he's probably a little bit more enthusiastic.
Well, the other story is at the end of that year in Lewiston, Idaho, mm-hmm. and the Hornets won their first game and lost their next two, and Coach Bingham was not a happy camper, and the team is leaving at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I got up to go out and watch them leave. And Vern McKenzie and I were watching, and Bingham came over and he said, "Jaime's not here." Jaime wasn't in his room, and he wasn't there for the bus. And he handed his ticket to Vern, and he said, "If he shows up, get him to Seattle." And so the bus hadn't been gone 5 minutes, and here comes a little Ranger pickup with a good-looking redhead driving, and Jaime with a smile. So I don't think Jaime minded.
It's, you know, that's, I hate to say that, but that's more common than you would think. I remember we went to a baseball regional up in North Dakota, South Dakota a few years ago, and this was when Sean Jones, who used to be at Central Missouri, is now the athletic director at Henderson State. It was his first year as the athletic director at Henderson State, and they had just made the regional for the first time. They're all excited, and we're at our practice and the day after their first game, and I'm talking to Sean up in the stands. He goes, "Yeah, I've had a rough night. I had to go find a player because he hadn't shown up." So finally they found him on some guy he played with in summer ball, found him on that guy's couch. So Sean found him and took him to McDonald's and got him the greasiest thing in the world that he could eat and made him eat it and made him sit up there in the stands with him. So,
man, Lewiston, those, of course, Lewis and Clark, the home of Lewis and Clark, and that was NAIA days, and Emporia State went there several times. And one of the more memorable ones, Brian McEldowney, was big relief pitcher for the Hornets, and we took our family. Mm-hmm. And I'd been somewhere. We'd been somewhere, but for some reason the kids weren't with us. Maybe I had taken a coach somewhere or something. Got out of the car, and here comes my son Jamie, who's about 7 or 8 years old, with Brian McEldowney. And he said, "Dad, can I have the keys?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Mac and I are going for pizza." So, and then the last story I'll tell was when the Hornets played in the championship game, mm-hmm. and the guy, the SID from Lewis and Clark, informed me the morning of the game that we might not have a seat in the press box because the newspaper from Seattle was coming. And as it turned out, we had a seat, but Dick Nybarger, who was actually there covering it for Kegs, had to sit in the doorway.
Was that better or worse than the spot when you had to go to Lindenwood to do the game?
Oh, Lindenwood was just like being in a wind tunnel. We were outside, and that was the one where the first game, and they're playing the national anthem. And as the national anthem starts, I stand up, and I mean, I got papers. I mean, when you do a baseball game, you have a lot of stuff, and I'm trying to hold stuff down because the wind's gusting 30, 40 miles an hour. And I've succeeded in getting on my feet, and I succeeded in getting everything held down. I didn't succeed in getting my hat off. And an older gentleman in front of me, when the national anthem was over, turned around and said, "That's disgusting, not taking your hat off." And I wanted to say, "Well," and I said, "Man, I guess I just have to be disgusting." I let Michael Shonrock know, though. He was a president at Lindenwood then. So I let him. I said, "All the money you spent on all the brick on this beautiful place, you think you could have made a press facility?" He didn't respond.
No.
So I want to talk some about you and Greg's travels when we come back, but let's get our second break in, and then we'll come back. And we need to visit the Royals, of course. And
do we have to?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of a sad story, isn't it? This is Saturday Morning Sports Talk. You're listening to KVOE. We're live and local, and we're driven by LongvineAuto.com.
At Longvine Auto Plaza in Emporia, quality products and great customer service are what we value most. We work to provide our friends and customers our very best. We know how important a clean and safe environment is for you to shop in. We want you to feel comfortable about your safety while you look for the newest from Chevy and Buick. Chevy is the only brand to earn J.D. Power Dependability Awards for cars, trucks, and SUVs for 5 years in a row. And Buick has the most complete lineup of luxury SUVs. Need maintenance or repairs on your current vehicle? Let one of our award-winning service professionals or our Total Collision Center get you back on the road. If customer service and quality products are what you value most, come to Long Vine Auto Plaza. It's our total commitment to you that has made the difference for over 50 years. So come in today or visit us at longvineauto.com. Chevy, find new roads.
Live and local sports news and views. Saturday morning sports talk on 14 KVOE.
All right, welcome back. Saturday morning sports talk. Don Weiss is our guest. And we visited with Kevin Hoover from the PDGA, a photojournalist, and interesting stuff there. And we've been talking about Greg and about some of the trips, Don, and experiences. And we're going to get back to that, but I think we should mention. I want to mention, I think Opie Down Home is their parade today. Yep. Jesse and Carolyn are the grand marshals, which makes sense, doesn't it?
Very deserving.
So the basketball hierarchy at Opie High School. Well, I understand. Well, they'll be the hierarchy for a while.
Yeah.
And boy, they made a bunch of other coaches happy. Wimbledon finals, the women today, Ashley Brady and I don't even know her first. Her first name is probably Helen, but her last name is Pliskova. I think it's Pliskova. So, and she is from obviously Russia or somewhere like that. And then tomorrow, Novak Djokovic and Berrettini.
Berrettini, yep.
Yeah, 25-year-old. He looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Novak may get challenged for the first time. So
yeah, but he's got a little bit of Wiley experience there too. So
yeah, we'll see. Boy, the semifinal matches, neither one of them were very good. They both won handily. So okay, Don, I told you off air. Most memorable road trip. First of all, how many miles have you guys kept track?
Oh no,
no way. No, there's got to be. Yeah, I have no idea, Greg. It's got to be. I mean, there have been thousands that we've done in a two-week period. We've done some of those trips. So
are you pushing a million miles? You guys ought to work on that.
20 years, probably.
You ought to work on that.
I mean, I don't know if I want to. That's like trying to figure out my hourly wage. I don't want to do that. So,
so okay. So what's let's do some memories. What's the worst you remember?
The worst one that I remember. Well, first off, there aren't too many bad ones. I mean, when you get when your job is to go cover collegiate athletics, there aren't too many bad ones. Now, most uncomfortable one I remember was we went down and we played Baylor in women's basketball in an exhibition game, and I was late getting the reservation in at Enterprise for the car, so we ended up taking a Jeep, like a Land Cruiser or something like that. So that was a little bit of a rough ride. And it was one of those down and back trips where we left at like probably what 7 in the morning and then got back at 7 in the morning type situation. That one was a little rough, Greg.
That one was. For me, when it comes to just actually making trips, I'll have to go back to one of the playoff games back in the early or late 80s going to Adams State. I just happened to be put on the fan bus, and at that time, people could smoke.
Oh.
And that bus trip down and back was not the most pleasant, but the result was pretty good because Emporia State did win it. Adams State won the game, but the bus trip itself was not a pleasant bus ride.
That one was one I remember. I was still in the athletic training world, and I was working with the Topeka Sizzlers. We had a game that night at home, so we're in the Expo Center, and we've trying to tune in to 104.9 on the radio in Topeka inside the middle of the building, listening to the end of it, and kind of missed shoot around while I was waiting for Mike Birch score.
You'd really be screwed now.
Yeah, I know.
Because 104.49 is WIBW-FM's.
I know.
Or WIBW.
I'd be able to listen to it online. Listen to it online now.
Yeah, Well, if it wasn't blocked out.
True.
Well, it wouldn't be for us because we don't block those out.
You don't block Emporia State games.
No, not on Mix 104.9.
Nope. So.
Yeah, there's lots of ways.
Yeah, but there's a lot of games, trips like the probably one of the worst ones. This one didn't involve Greg, I don't think, because I don't remember if you were with us on the trip when we went to play Gonzaga. And Coach Mo did the reservations for the airlines.
No, I wasn't on that trip. I was on the next trip.
I
was on the flight home.
Yeah, you made the flight home. We didn't make the flight home. We made the flight into Minneapolis and then drove home from Minneapolis.
It was a bonding experience, Don.
It very much was. It very much was.
How about the trip to Fargo on the airliner? Did you guys?
I didn't get to take that trip because I was at Central Missouri at that time.
Okay. Did you get on the airliner, Greg?
Yes. But I don't recall making the trip back and forth. I just remember the game and being in the Fargo Dome. And
what I remember about that is we got there the night before, of course, and we're staying in a Holiday Inn, and they have a casino, and we're playing $5 blackjack, $5 limit. I mean, every bet's $5. I think you could double down, but that was about the extent of it, so it wasn't overly exciting. Jim Kessler is sitting next to me, and the dealer says, "So what are you guys in Fargo for?" And we said, "Well, we play North Dakota State tomorrow night." She said, "Oh, you play the Bison? You're going to get beat." Well, we couldn't wait.
Not so much.
We couldn't wait to get back the next night to let her know that we didn't get beat. That was the last home opener the Bison have
only home opener they've ever lost in the Fargo Dome. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a pretty good trip.
Yep.
As well.
My best travel story was with basketball. Coach Slaymaker, Felix Scrimmett was the assistant coach. They're playing in the Chico State Christmas holiday tournament. And we play the tournament. We're coming back. And Coach Slay's favorite thing to do after the tournament's over with is go to Reno for the casinos, for Shirley. Mm-hmm. And we're going there, but the roads are closed because it's too snow-packed, so you can't get to Reno. I'm driving one of the vans, and so we turn around, we start heading back to Sacramento. And then, of course, at this time, there's no cell phones. Nobody has cell phones, so we can't keep in touch. You know, what are you going to do? I'm following Coach Slaymaker, 6-lane freeway. All of a sudden, he just makes a quick right up the exit. We don't see them again until we get on the plane in San Francisco.
See, I've heard that story too, and I just worry because I went with Coach Slay when we took the first trip out to Chico. And when we left, we drove to Reno through Donner Pass when you were supposed to have chains on your tires, and we just had these minivans from San Francisco that weren't even supposed to be out of state. So we ended up going through it. We passed road graders to get over there. Didn't have a room in Reno on New Year's Eve, so that was interesting. We got one room for the entire men's basketball team that we stayed in. The walls to that room were probably about as thick as a piece of paper. It was quite an interesting little trip there.
The trip that I'm talking about was the last time that Coach Slaymaker took them to Chico. He took them a couple of times.
Yeah, the two times, yeah.
And I was there with the first time, and I remember being in Reno on New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go sleep in that room.
Yeah.
So I'll just find a chair to try to take a cat nap. But, you know, Coach Slaymaker trips, there's some memorable. I remember coming back from Marshall, Minnesota. In the blizzard and snowstorm through Nebraska, and you're wondering, okay, are we going to survive this one? You know, there were some good trips with Coach Slay, and there's always the one trip that I did not look forward to making was when Rolla was in the MIAA. That trip to Rolla, Missouri, was through the winding roads between Jefferson City and Rolla. Those roads weren't the most enjoyable.
Well, Don, when you said the other day, and you were talking about coming home from Kearney, and it kind of triggered some stuff for me because I think it was a Kearney trip that made me decide I've probably done this long enough. So, well, good stuff. I'm glad you guys aren't done. You'll have a few more to
I'm so looking for. I'll take all of them because last fall not being able to go. I mean, it was great. I went with Greg on a couple of trips to Chase County and Madison, but that's not quite the same as going up to Maryville or down to Pittsburgh or something like that.
Yeah, so. When they take it away, you appreciate it a whole lot.
A lot more.
Yeah, a whole lot more. Well, the Royals, and boy, I'll tell you what's going on in Cleveland. I mean, they are so snake bit. And it's all like now they got to follow the script or something.
Yeah.
Because losing, having the lead and losing in the last inning or
well, in last night's game where they had a chance, you know, I mean, they're down 1-0. Salvi makes the double play down at third on that. And then Soler actually hits a home run. So you're excited for that and think this might be the game they're going to actually do it. And
Salvi was the luckiest guy in the world. But he screwed that play up so bad and ends up coming out like a. Well, I'm concerned about him right now because he is swinging at everything, and I don't know whether he's trying to get ready for the home run derby or what, but he's a bit of the problem because he comes up last night with a tying run at second base. Actually, it would have been the lead run, with the score tied, and strikes out and doesn't swing, no strikes. They don't throw him a single strike, and the number of pitches they swing at, I don't know. I don't know who the hitting coach. You know, I'm not one to jump on the coaches, but I really question what they're doing at the plate.
Al, you look at Salvi's career, and I'll go back to 2014 against the Oakland A's, and I'm sitting in bed and I'm listening to the game. Just throw it to him down and away. He'll swing at it. Salvador Perez, throughout his career, has had a tendency to swing at pitches outside the strike zone.
In that particular game in 2014, he swung one outside the strike zone down and away, and it got down, and they went on to the World Series. Yeah. So
he's an amazing bad ball hitter, but it's just, you know, and last night Dozier comes up in a tight situation and takes one right down the middle on the first pitch and then swings the two pitches that are 6-8 inches off the plate. And I don't know whether the picture was whopper's odd and we're being fooled because the umpire was calling some out there too. But it looks to me like, I don't know, it's beginning to, I mean, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Royals fan, but it's getting pretty hard to live with.
It's frustrating, that's for sure.
So, and they play, 6-10 tonight?
5-10 tonight, and then tomorrow afternoon, 12-10, and then it's the All-Star break. Tomorrow night in the Futures game, you can check out Bobby Witt of the Royals. He'll be playing in that, and I think there's one other.
Along with Prada.
Prada, yep.
Yeah.
First baseman.
Yeah, so they'll be in the Futures game tomorrow. Then on Monday night, Salvador Perez will be in the Home Run Derby. So that'll be a reason to watch that. And, of course, Salvi will be the starting catcher for the American League in the All-Star game on Tuesday. And let's just hope that when everybody comes back from the All-Star game, the Royals can start putting together some runs and start winning some games and maybe get the season turned around.
Yep. And we can pray for world peace, too.
We still do.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us here on Saturday morning. Don, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Always good to talk to you and helps us kind of fill out our morning. And good interview with Kevin Hoover from the PDGA. And looks like it's starting to come around a little bit. Maybe the Altrusa State Farm Golf Tournament will get underway. I know one of the ladies that's one of the chairman of it. She was sweating bullets last night. I told her, I said, you know, golf tournament, you don't sweat bullets. You just go with the flow. Whatever happens, happens. And so hopefully they get a play and Tony can relax a little bit. So anyway, it's going to do it for us. We're driven by longbineauto.com.
AM 1400, KVOE Emporia, 96.9 FM, K245 BQ, Emporia.
From ABC News, I'm Derek Dennis. School districts nationwide getting a new recommendation from the